Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
Welcome to The Dugout. I'm Ant McGinley, acting assistant manager, while Niall heads back from international duty. Every weekend on The Dugout, we're joined by a couple of footballers who've played at the top level to cast an eye over the Premier League fixtures. And after a two-week international break, we're glad to say that the season is moving into the final few weeks of the Premier League returns. I'm also going to take the opportunity to ask my guests if they've ever experienced anything like the booing Harry Maguire went through while turning out for England this week, and as his club Manchester United announced a pre-season tour in Australia, I'll be asking them about the best and possibly the worst pre-season trips that they had. To help me do all of it, the two players who've had, both of them, had the privilege to represent England, one at the old Wembley and one at the new. I'll let you work out which was at which. Trevor Stephen, who, as well as wearing the three lines, you made your name at Burnley, Everton, Rangers and Marseille. Welcome to the show, Trevor.
Good afternoon. Lovely to see you.
And my other international today is Matt Jarvis. Amongst other clubs, he's played for West Ham, Wolverhampton, Walsall and Woking. No need to ask what his favourite letter is. Hello, Matt.
Good afternoon. Yeah, couldn't have worked out better.
And also, I think you had a brief loan spell at Norwich as well.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so which kind of ruined the run.
Ruined your W's, yeah.
So let's start with what happened to Harry Maguire this week. There's been a lot of talk about it. A lot of people have come out in support. His teammates, managers from other clubs, including Brendan Rodgers at his press conference ahead of the weekend. So I'd like to talk about your own experiences of this as well. I wonder, were you ever singled out like that and booed by your own fans, and how does that affect you? I'm just trying to sort of put myself into Harry's boots as much as I can. So would it happen to you or one of your teammates? How do you cope with that? And also, was there a moment where you push past it or you win them over again? And what's that like? Trevor, let me go to you first on this one.
Honestly, for myself, no, never experienced anything like that. Obviously, you can get you can do something wrong on the pitch, and you get a momentary or a game could be awkward and difficult because if you're playing really badly. But only on that's based on what you've actually done on the football field. I was actually at Wembley for the game. When Harry got received this terrible booing from. The crowd. It takes my mind back to when I played for England, and John Barnes was subject to very much the same thing, albeit I have to tell you, worse than what Harry's had to suffer. And I think with John, it was obviously back in those days, it was sort of a racist element to the England support, and John was one of the early pioneers is the wrong word, but one of the early black players, coloured players to play for the national team. And so anyway, John was booed throughout his performance at a couple of games at Wembley as well. So I was actually, the first time it happened, I was on the bench and listening to every time that John received the ball, he was booed, and it was horrible. And we as players were talking to each other on the bench going, this is unbelievable, it's incredible. John, to his credit, stood up, took the that kind of pressure, demanded the ball as much as he could, and kept involved in the game. So I do know what it's like, and it is shocking what Harry must have felt like at Wembley, having served the country like he served the England team. I don't know what he must have felt, because it was almost like it's a complete cheap shot, if you like, that somebody started that and then other people just thought it was okay to carry on doing it, and then it spread, and it was very horrible to be a part of it. You know, it's you can't condone that kind of behavior whatsoever. So I really, really felt for him. He looked almost shocked, as did the other England players when that happened. It was very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and as you say, he's been, you know, when you look at his track record for England, the performances that he's put in, the goals that he scored, the fact that he's, you know, led the team to a final and a semi-final at Majors, and you know, really, especially when you look at the performance on Tuesday night as well, he hardly put a foot wrong in that game as well. And so it's and with John Barnes in particular, I mean, he was a real sort of he really stood out as a skillful player amongst that team as well. What about you, Matt? What was your experiences of this? I mean, did you personally ever get booed like that? You played a little more recently, so if it's a generational thing, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me personally, I've only ever been booed by, you know, like the away fans, and you know, nothing personal. In that, obviously, you get whatever they can to try and put you off. But from home fans, no, I can't say I've had anything like what Harry Maguire has received. And I think it shows that with the rest of the players, like you've just said about, you know, feeling it and, you know, having that experience of being at the game, and maybe like when you said you're on the bench, you get that atmosphere and you can feel it, and the players feel it, and I'm sure that's why they've all come out and backed Harry Maguire, because he has been, you know, a leader and has played, never let the country down. I think that's the biggest thing for him. Yes, it feels like people are jumping on the bandwagon because he's had a difficult season at Man United, and that sort of overlapping into his England career. But the only thing I can sort of put it close to is when I was at West Ham, you know, the fans booed, it was Sam Allardyce, really. They just didn't like the style of his play. Some games we won a game and he still, we were like the final whistle went and there's boos going out, and Sam Allardyce is cupping his ear to the crowd, like, what's going on? And obviously that's never nice to feel or have, but that's, you know, that was for a group or for the manager rather than just one specific player, and before the game as well. That makes it like worse, because you're prepared for the game and you're ready to go and you've got everything ready, your mental state, and then you get that thrown in just before the game and so he's done extremely well to manage that. And I think he's shown that this year, the amount of criticism he's had this season to continue to come out and play, and as you said, he played extremely well for England.
Yeah, I'm curious as well, like, you're talking about that mindset there and preparing and going into the game. We sometimes hear people talking about when they're playing about you know, not always hearing the noise, not always being aware of what's going on the crowd, because they're so focused on the game and you're listening out for what your teammates are shouting, maybe the instructions from the manager. But how much of that mindset, if I could stay with you for this, Matt, you know, are you able to shut that out? And I'm not going to suggest for a moment that he didn't notice it was happening, because that would be ridiculous. But, you know, this is a guy who's used to playing at the very top level, and so he's dealing with a lot of pressures already, not just with his performance and from his managers and for his place, but then there's also commercial things that come into this as well, and it's his livelihood. And so, you know, while on the outside there is that tendency to say, oh, well, he just kicks a ball around for a living, you know, there's lots of other people that want to do that instead of him, so he has that pressure on him to perform. And it's not just his own performance, it's against the players he's trying to mark and stop from scoring. And so I imagine that, especially in that role as a captain as well, he has a lot of resilience built up. But I'm just curious as to like how much of that you're able to shut out during the game, and then is that something that you would take with you afterwards?
Yeah, I think realistically, you know, before the game, having your mindset and everything focused, a lot of these players do that already. And he's got so much, like you said, he's the captain. He's got to be the leader in the change room. He's got to gee everyone up before they go out. He's then got to think of tactics, who he's marking from set pieces. But this is all normal stuff that he would do at Man United week in, week out. The thing that would throw you off is, obviously, it's before the game. You can hear that. It's not like you can't hear that. And as much as you block everything else out and you're trying to hear people shouting and screaming during a game, like for me, I was always in the wide areas, so I could hear the crowd. I was very close to them, so you can get to hear it. Maybe him being in a centre half position, you might not hear it as much, but you're not going to tell me that he won't be able to hear it. You know, he will, but it's just mentally he is in a position that, well, from the outside looking in, it looks like he's able to cope with that. It's not nice, and it probably takes a long time to come around to that sort of mindset and be able to focus yourself with everything, all the other distractions that are going on. But you can only control what you can do, and that's what he's trying to do himself at the moment, and that's a hard thing to do.
I think, Trevor, as well, the difficulty in this situation, as we've pointed out, you know, all three of us, he's playing relatively well. He's in a side that's struggling at the moment, at Manchester United, but they're still in contention for a Champions League place. They're still up at the top end of Premier League football. And so, although he's had a couple of moments and a couple of mistakes, which I'm sure everybody has in their career, he's still the same player that he was. Also, we're very on the outside looking in, even in something like this, as the media, we're not privy to everything that's going on in his personal life outside of those things, other things that could be affecting him there. But I suppose what I'm trying to say here is there's not a lot he can do better to change that opinion. Or is it as simple as that? Is it something like he just needs to score a winning goal in a final, or do a couple of last minute ditch tackles?
Not really. The environment that he's in at Manchester United, I think everyone recognises, you know, biggest club in the world, or one of the biggest clubs in the world. You attach the massive transfer fee that, again, he wasn't party to that. He was just the sort of pawn in the middle of it. Then he has the captain's armband. He's playing in a Manchester United team, which has underperformed for the last 2 or 3 years. I know last year there were runners up in the, what was it, the year before, I can't remember, runners up in the league. But they have been underperforming, and it was a hard act to follow Sir Alex Ferguson. So Manchester United are not the same club, but they've still got the same fans with the same expectations. And I think because Harry's captain, he spent a lot of money, he's meant to be bulletproof in his skin and bulletproof in his performances. And he's fallible like anybody else. And I think if you're not playing well in front of 75,000 and you're receiving really, really poor media coverage, and you've got social media to deal with, I think it's a very hard place to be. I think he goes to England, and he knows he can concentrate and focus more on his football rather than the noise that goes around it at Manchester United. And I think that has crept into to his performances at Manchester United, because it's got more and more. He's never been able to stop the sort of wave of this. But he's a very good player. As you know, Gareth Southgate said, you know, form's temporary and class is permanent. If you're asking me, is Harry Maguire a class centre back? I was saying, you know, he's an excellent centre-back, class I would associate with genius type, mm-hmm. you know, class, that super class, that sort of exquisite midfielder or striker. But I think he is the top level, and I think he is worthy of an England shirt. I think what happened to him at Wembley should never be repeated, and hopefully lessons are learned from that.
Just one other thing that came up in conversation when I was talking about this, and I can't remember who said it. Maybe it's something that's been paraphrased by a lot of people, but the response that if you're being booed, you know you're doing something right. But obviously that was built in and intended for the opposition fans booing you. I'm just curious, is in terms of like as teammates in the dressing room, obviously they've all come out and they've been very vocal. Declan Rice, Jack Grealish in particular, coming out there and in support of him. But in terms of in the dressing room, I think something we see with England at the minute, Matt, is that it's very unified, and Gareth really gets behind the players all the way through this, and he sticks, and he's very supportive. And so do you think that what's happening here is they're taking it as if it's against the whole team rather than just against Harry?
Definitely. I think that's what Gareth Southgate has done since he's come in. I think he's got that, the England squad as a togetherness, as a package, that it's probably never been like that for a long time. You can see everyone's pulling together. There's no, you know, hoping that someone will have a bad game so you can go and play. I think everyone is unified. I think it's been the first time that I can remember and look and think that everyone is happy, enjoying their football, actually looks like they're happy. You know, the training looks lively, looks bright, and everyone seems to be, after the tournament or the friendlies or whatever you competition you're in, they come back off it so much more relaxed, so much like they've had a really good camp. And I think that's all down to the manager, what he's done. So I do think that they've basically taken it as it's a hit against all of us, and they can't, you know, they've backed Harry Maguire to the hill, and it's great as a teammate to be able to do that. If you can see someone that's, you know, not that's played a really good game and has taken a lot of criticism, you want to back that up and be like, he's been fantastic. He's had a great game, and we're all standing with him.
Harry's Manchester United side take on Leicester City in the evening kickoff on Saturday, and it's a Leicester City side that are going to be without Wilfried Ndidi for the rest of the season. Yet another injury. Just as Fofana comes back, it's something of a one in, one out policy. But I think it's fair to say that there's a big sense of underachievement with Leicester City this season, Trevor.
Without a doubt, but I think it does fall into the category, as Matt was talking about there, but not for Manchester United, but particularly for Leicester. Injuries to key players has been absolutely key to this. And Fofana, I think, was the one player that Leicester had brought into the club and absolutely excelled at. So Fofana for sure. And there have been one or two others. Jamie Vardy is not as young as he used to be, so he's found that. He's not been able to contribute as many goals as he would have liked. So it has been a bit awkward. It has been a bit difficult for Leicester. I'm not of the believer, though, that, you know, Brendan Rodgers should have been under any pressure. I think if you're realistic, Leicester do have to reinvent themselves. They can't just rely on the same bunch of players. Do have to take a risk as well in their recruitment. But I think Brendan is a great manager. I think, you know, if he was flying high at Leicester at the moment, I'm sure he would be on the shortlist for Man United. But the fact that it's not going that brilliantly for Leicester, he's not really been talked about. He's been talked, you know, Ten Hag and Pochettino. I do think that there could be, if there's a strong end to the season for Leicester, and this game is in that, the Man United game, that the Brendan Rodgers name could resurface for the Manchester United job.
Well, not long to go to find out what happens in that game. It is the evening kickoff on Saturday at Old Trafford. We're going to look at some of the other big fixtures in the Premier League this weekend with Matt and Trevor. But also, we're going to look, again, another Manchester United story. They're doing a pre-season friendly for the first time, travelling to Australia. I'll be finding out if our footballers have ever had a trip quite as exotic in a pre-season.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Hello and welcome back to The Dugout. I'm Ant McGinley, and with Trevor Stephen and Matt Jarvis, we're previewing some of the big fixtures taking place this weekend in the Premier League, as well as looking over some of the interesting stories that we found, including the fact that although the season isn't quite over yet, pre-season plans are already in place, which includes Manchester United travelling to Australia for a couple of friendlies. Now, in my experience, when I started going to watch football for Manchester City, friendlies would often be the local teams, the Buries, the Rochdales, those kinds of games. And it was a big day out for those fans, and it was a great occasion. But things have changed and moved on now. And so I'm just curious as to see, I know, Trevor, you played that kind of era where I started watching football. But did you ever get to experience an away trip like this as a friendly? And was it very friendly? I mean, did people go in hard to try and prove themselves against you? And also, did you get much of a holiday out there? Because this sounds like a bit of a dream.
Well, no, to be quite honest with you. It was one of those things that, as you said back in the day, Ant, that there were local arrangements for pre-season friendlies. Of course, that has changed in time. You know, we used to travel away to Europe, you know, Switzerland, Holland, you name it, anywhere around there. But the modern day game is run on different set of criteria. You know, the modern game is about money, and where the money is, the teams follow, and that's what you see. I played for Rangers, and there's a game being promoted at the moment between Celtic and Rangers to be played in Melbourne, and it's caused a lot of issues and problems with the fans, because they thought it was diminishing the power of the fixture, and you can see arguments on both sides of that. But the fact that clubs are looking to do this, without a doubt, is here to stay, because it is money driven. I don't know if it's beneficial to players. Probably Matt has had more experience of this than me, but you know, players are looked after really well now. They go into the best hotels, they go in the best, you know, travel arrangements, pretty well looked after from every angle, and it's all about whether you know, it fits in properly into a schedule that doesn't affect, you know, the important games, the league games that are about to commence. So I'm not against it. I think the game still has to grow. And you know, you can't keep asking the Premier League to only play its official games in England. But if there is an opportunity to spread the word, spread the love, if you want, about the English game and the teams that play in it, then, you know, you've got to take these opportunities. So yeah, I've got limited experience on that, and to be quite honest with you, but I do understand why they're doing it. Not quite sure how it feels to be a player, to be rushed off to the four corners of the world to satisfy some TV production, you know, but that's really what it is. There's no more to it than that. Of course, you can gain your fitness, but you know, you're stretching the imagination that it's an easy thing to do.
Matt has a big grin on his face, which suggests his experience of friendlies is a lot more glamorous than either of us.
Oh, I'll go for it then. Well, yeah. I have been, one at Wolves and one at West Ham. I've been to Perth. So, you know, we went for like, I think it was about 10 days. So you're basically flying a gazillion hours.
Was this pre-season?
Pre-season tour. So pre-season tour. But so it was blew out there. But this was a while ago. So we flew, and before we were flying, like a couple of days leading up to it, I remember sitting in the like canteen at training at lunchtime, and the club doctor was bringing in these, it was like blue lights. So it was, you had to sit in front of this table with blue lights to try and trick your like eyes and your body that you're to try and change right. the time of the day and all of this, so that we could try and adapt to right. the change of time when we went to Perth. Wow. So you would go there. You were there. We were there for about 7 days, like really, like in on the ground for about 7 days. And everyone's saying how lucky you are. You're going to Perth. You're doing this. I saw the hotel, which could have been anywhere. We saw the training ground, and then we got one afternoon off. And I thought, you know, really, I need to go and see something. So I went to like, you know, the zoo or something just for the afternoon to say that I've been out. And then you fly back, and all in all, you sort of miss out. For me, you miss out on at least a week of training, because when you get there, you can't go flat out. You need to sort of adapt your bodies. You have to do this. So you're really only training for about 3 or 4 days when you're out there. And then you play a game, maybe two games, and then you fly back, and then you've got to adjust yourself again. And then you've got to get back into routine. And I did it with West Ham as well. I remember we started a timer from the training ground, and it was about just over 36 hours that we left from the training ground to go to the airport to then fly to, we went to New Zealand. And then you get into the hotel and you do exactly what I said. You do that again, and then you fly all the way back. And we got about 3 or 4 days off after we got back from that, because you just got to sort of get your body clock back to normal to then go again and try not to get injuries. So for me, although it was lovely to say that I've been to New Zealand, I've been to Perth, I hardly saw any of it. And the actual part of it is pre-season to get yourself fit and to play games. I feel like it didn't quite work. I feel like if you were back a bit more local or flying to like Germany, I've been to Germany a lot of times, you actually get a lot more benefit, because you can go straight in, you can train, you can play games, you can get back. And without all the time change and everything, your body's all over the place. So I have experienced a wonderful, not quite for the full trip, and it was amazing, but maybe the football.
And how
it's financial though, isn't it?
Those
choices. Those choices are made for the clubs.
It is. And like I said, it is great to go and see, because the amount of fans that were over there and then watching it, as you said, to show off the English game is an incredible opportunity. But just as players for a pre-season friendly, and to actually, like going back to one of the things you said about, do you feel under pressure of your spot when you're in pre-season? Of course you do. You need to perform. So any little chance you get, and you know, Man United are going to have a new manager. You know, every single minute of your performance in any of these pre-season games is going to be a massive impact into what the manager's first impressions of you are in games. So as far as flying all that way to play and then you've got to perform because you're under pressure from a new manager, it's going to be highly, highly strong.
How did you perform in those games? Just out of interest.
Fantastic. You've got no you've got no video evidence. I was outstanding.
It's just interesting the way you mentioned there about it being financial, Trevor. Actually, I seem to remember that in the sort of era of friendlies we were talking about before, it was a different type of financial, because it was almost like a community thing, because it was an opportunity for the clubs to, it was like a gesture for the clubs that they would come and you would have this First Division Premier League club, as it was, coming along to this smaller club, and they were guaranteed to sort of have a big family day, and it was almost like an FA Cup tie for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely the case, where you would get a good turnout, you know, wherever you went, into one of the lower league clubs, or sometimes non-league clubs, who would get a real boost in their income, from their normal income anyway. Those games still happen, but it tends to be the second 11 or the under 21s or the academy teams who go out there, and you'll get a bit of a bump in the crowd. But no, those days are well gone. It's you know, the Premier League clubs sort of look after themselves in many ways these days, but that's just the way it is. The game has changed a lot, and it's pretty much never going to turn to go back the way that we knew it. That's just a simple fact. And you know, despite myself coming from a different generation, I totally get where the game's going. It is, as a Premier League, if we want that to continue to be the best league in the world, we've got to try everything to keep spreading the word on it and support it, because it is the strongest league in the world, both on the field and financially.
Yeah,
that's, I think as well, just very quickly on that, when you were saying about you're playing your reserves, your 23s in the pre-season games, that's the opportunity that you get to go and play. That's how I got myself in the first team at Gillingham, is because I went on pre-season tour with the first team and then played in these games and played well, and then I stayed in the first team squad. These are your opportunities to go and play and show the manager what you've got, because you've got an opportunity to play other teams in and around your leagues, or if you're going abroad, you're still playing. But that's the opportunity that you get to go and show what you can do in the first team.
Well, no 39th game just yet for the Premier League, which has been mooted a few times. But the Premier League does return this weekend. And let's look at some of the matches that we've got lined up. First game of the weekend has got a lot at stake. Liverpool against Watford is the lunchtime kickoff on Saturday at Anfield. And the situation is quite simple for both teams. If Liverpool win every game that they have left, they win the Premier League. If Watford win every game they have left, they will stay up. However, the former seems a lot more likely. Trevor, what do Watford have to do to get something from this game, and can you see that happening?
Well, I don't think I'm capable of coming up with an answer to that, Ant, because the last game after this international break, or one of the last games that they would have wanted, is to go to an Anfield that will be buzzing to see their players back. The quality of their players, and the fact, you're right, if Liverpool win all of their games, which of course will include a game against Man City, if they win all of their games, they win the Premier League. And there's no doubt that whether you're Watford or Liverpool, you're now really well and truly focused on this period between now and the end of the season. It's almost like a mini league in itself, coming off this international break. For Watford, what can you do to keep Liverpool out? Because their options are so diverse, they can score goals from all over. You know, Watford have to go out and try and win it if they can. But a result for Watford is really getting a draw, getting a point on the board. But we know that that's not really enough. So you're in between a rock and a hard place. So what does Roy Hodgson do? I think stay in the game in the first half. Just try and stay in the game. Try and nick a set piece. Try and get your noses in front, and then try and batten down the hatches. But in all truth, you know, it's got Liverpool home win written all over it.
Matt, the one potential sort of crack of hope for them is there may be a little bit of animosity between Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, because 6 weeks after beating Egypt in the African Nations Cup, Mane's side put Salah out in another penalty shootout of the World Cup. Now, I get the impression that both players are much friendlier than that, and it goes beyond that. But I'm just curious if you've had teammates that have come up against each other outside the club, possibly in internationals, and then come back and had this bit of animosity. Or do you think that, you know, the modern footballer is professional enough to go beyond that? And not let it affect their performance?
Look, I'm sure they're great mates, and that they've probably spoken, like, you know, I know after the last time, not this one, just gone, that Mane was arms around consoling Salah, and I'm sure they're great friends, but Salah's obviously going to be really disappointed and annoyed. But I think that helps Liverpool, because he's going to come back and he's going to be so determined to finish off this season on a high now, after going out, you know, not making it to the World Cup. He's going to be really concentrating on getting silverware, and I think that's only a positive for Liverpool. You know, I don't think there'll be any jokes between Mane and Salah in the first meet-up. It might take a few more days, but I can't see it being a problem, and I think it's only going to benefit them, because Salah's going to be more determined than ever to go and prove everyone that he is a world-class player and go and get some silverware.
Yeah, and looking ahead, if they can nail him down and get this contract signed, it does mean that for next season, he's going to have a nice little winter break while everybody's off in Qatar, which will put him in prime position for the rest of the season. Now, the introduction I gave to that game, I could almost give the same one to Burnley against Manchester City, because same situation. Burnley, you know, struggling. Winning all their games would keep them up. And Manchester City, just ahead of Liverpool again, as Trevor pointed out, if they win all their games, which includes that big game against Liverpool, they will win the Premier League. Now, Trevor, over the recent seasons, this game has had a habit of being very one-sided indeed. In fact, at one point, Man City almost broke the record for the most consecutive 5-0 wins against a side. Burnley have not had a great season, but they've also not been this desperate for points for a long time. And we've also seen, under the new ownership, some really shrewd moves in terms of transfers coming in. Weghorst and Kone look like real good buys. Do you see this as being a potential slip-up here for Man City?
No, I don't, unfortunately. I think, again, you can compare this to the Liverpool-Watford fixture. The team that Burnley wouldn't have wanted to be facing, you know, returning to the Premier League fixture list, is this one. The only thing that could have made it worse, it could have been at the Etihad, it could have been at Man City. But apart from that, this is not good news for Burnley. Because they're one of my old teams, and I've got a lot of affection for them, follow them very, very closely. And I have been worried and concerned over the majority of this season. They did have a little bit of an improvement in results shortly after Christmas, but that wasn't sustained. They couldn't maintain it, and find themselves in a very precarious position. As much as I like Sean Dyche, and he's an admirable character, somebody who I think you would give you everything for as a player, sometimes you just haven't got enough in your dressing room. And I think Burnley are like that. And I have seen a bit of Burnley recently. I was at the Brentford away game, and that was a game that they could have won, but just didn't have it in them to win it. And that wasn't because of lack of heart or drive or ambition. It was just the quality wasn't quite there. And it was a game, as I said, that was very much vital to their destiny in the league. But I can't see, again, anything other than a Man City win, particularly when Raheem Sterling, again, I saw him at Wembley, looks in electric form. Their squad is amazing. And they know exactly what Liverpool know, that we have to win every football match. So it's going to be an intense end to the season, and I can see it. A three-pointer for Man City this weekend.
It does make for an exciting race towards the end of the season, which we didn't think we were going to get a few months ago. Let's move from one of Trevor's old clubs, partly because he looks a bit world-weary talking about them at the moment, and talk about one of your old clubs, Matt, who are doing much better at the moment and are sort of the outsiders, really, to get into Europe, which could be a real advantage to them, because actually, you know, nobody's really expecting them from them. There's quite a big gap between them and the teams below eighth. Do you see this as being the opportunity for them to break back into Wolves? Of course, they had that big adventure to break back into Europe just a couple of seasons ago. And, you know, they've been through a lot of changes recently, having lost players and managers, but it seems to be that there is something really good happening at Wolves at the moment.
Yeah, I think if you would have asked any Wolves fan, including me, before the season, how do I thought that this would go this season, I think you would have to have said, at best, mid-table, really. I think after Nuno leaving and Bruno Lage come in, and you're like, it just didn't seem like it was going to be, and they had a sluggish start. So you thought, and they have just got on with their job. They've been the surprise package each week. They just come through, get another result. And it's not like they've been playing 90 minutes of exceptional football. They've had like a 20-minute spell in games, 30 minutes in other games where they've played well and got themselves in front. And they've always been able to defend. And I think that team morale, I think, is huge. I think that's back where it was when they were in Europe. I think everyone enjoys playing in that team. I think Kilman's been outstanding as well this season. Connor Cody, and they just starting to get the forward line going a bit. I think Neves, in particularly in midfield, has been able to chip in with a few more goals, which you could arguably, it's the only thing that he possibly needed to improve on at the moment, is goal scoring, because that midfield's very much stay where they are and let the forward three sort of go and enjoy themselves. But with having less pressure on them, especially, you know, against Villa, to even to fight into the European places, I think they've just gone under the radar and a bit, you know, just got on with their work. I think it's helped them having that time on the training pitch all together, and they've all bought into what the new manager wants, and they've got a great squad, and it's only going to improve now as well.
Do you know, I was just thinking there, Matt, Bruno Lage is, he could be one of these managers that goes on to a Tottenham or, you know, or a, you know, somewhere down the line, one of the bigger clubs. You know, I know Wolves has got great traditions and great size, but there's a limit as to how big Wolves can become. I think what he's done this year is extraordinary. You know, he's sitting 10 points clear of ninth place, Villa. It's absolutely amazing, I think, what he's done. I wonder what it is. Have you heard any of the feedback as what the players, why they are responding to this guy so well?
Yeah, I think Connor Cody plays a huge role in that, because he's sort of been the bridge between the manager, like the old manager, the new manager and the players. And, you know, I know that a lot of them, they all live in and around them in Wolverhampton. So they're all close. Mm. They all spend a lot of time together. And as I said about team spirit, that's golden. You know, that's you need that to perform. And I think the training is where I think the most important the work has gone on, and everyone's been buzzing about how the training methods are, about what the style of play, because everyone just expects it. Oh, he's playing a similar system, it's all the same, but it's not. If you look closely at the details of how he wants to play, how he wants players to positionally where they want to be, and how they bring in the forward lines, they've done a lot of work and everyone seems to be happy with it. And that's, as I said, that's what the training ground's used for. And you say he's been the standout manager and in the sort of the trailing pack, I suppose, because it's been unexpected. Yeah. It's been a surprise to everyone. But it's once you get yourself there, the expectation level's right. Now we need to move on. And they have had really good transfer windows in the past. They've got some really good players. So if you're looking now to build, they've got a good run of games towards the end of the season as well. They've got winnable games. So if they can get as high as they possibly can and then have another good transfer window, they're going to be wanting to, well, again, try and get that European place the following year as well.
Quick mention for Villa, Trevor, just because you saw Ollie Watkins and Tyrone Mings scoring at Wembley this week. Villa themselves, two losses in a row before this game, but they do seem to be a club that's really turned themselves around and moving forward as well. In terms of the talent that they've got in the likes of Tyrone Mings and Ollie Watkins, does this give you a lot of hope for Villa moving forward?
Yeah, Villa, again, it's like Wolves. I think these traditional big clubs, you've always got a soft spot for them and you always want them to be doing well. And you know, it was a big leap of faith, wasn't it, from Steven Gerrard to leave where he was at Rangers to go to Aston Villa, which were sitting in a little precarious position there, where they did need to get some results just to make the season, you know, get back on track, let's say. Villa, again, is a big club, big support, great history. And I think Steven Gerrard can see the potential within the club. And he obviously looked at the quality of players before he went into the appointment, or took the appointment. And he's working away there, trying to get the best out of his team. I think what they've got at the moment is a little bit of inconsistency, but they certainly have quality. I think, you know, the Danny Ings and Watkins up front, I think that's started to, you know, pay dividends. They've got strength through the team. Is it Jacobs in the midfield?
Yeah,
I think he's. Steven's calling him a diamond there. Didn't know he was getting that when he walked into Villa Park, and they've got financial clout as well when they need it. I don't think he's going to go into the transfer market and really vie for the current absolute best, but he's going to be quite near to that. And he's got some shrewd contacts. And Coutinho, you have to say, is doing as well for Villa as he did for Liverpool. We haven't seen him often enough for Villa yet. He's only back in the club. But, you know, what an acquisition that was, even if it's on a temporary basis. Yeah, it's fantastic. Really, really good. Yeah, Villa, as I say, is one of those clubs that you just want to see doing well and doing and being in the Premier League, of course.
Unless, of course, you're a Birmingham fan.
There's always that, yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break there. When we come back, we'll look at the games taking place at Brighton, Chelsea and Leeds, plus the final game of the weekend, Sunday afternoon, where Tottenham host Newcastle.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
This episode is brought to you by Bye. It's Wonder Water. What makes Bye so great? It's simple. From raspberry lemon lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing Cherry and Palavo pineapple mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Dugout for our Premier League preview. And let's now look to a game on Sunday, which features teams that both my guests have played for. Matt's old team, West Ham United, take on Trevor's old side, Everton. So I'll let you go into bat for each of them, both having very different seasons. Let's do you first, Matt, and look at where West Ham are at and how you see this going.
Look, I think definitely they've got a great team. I think a starting 11. They've got a couple of players that they can bring in. It's all about momentum. They've had such a good season. I think they've had a couple of, you know, disappointing results recently, but that Europa League is one that they've got a they've focused on, and they've put such an incredible performance at home at the London Stadium. So then for them, they've just got to get back to business. They've got to give everything, because now the expectation levels are that high that fans want to see them in Europe. And it'll be a real disappointment for them to just, you know, the last sort of few weeks of the season to just drift away from it. But they have got the squad. As long as injury-wise they stay where they are, they've got a great squad and belief amongst the players. I think you see that from Declan Rice. He's been the outstanding player this season for them. And for him to get back after a good spell with England as well, get everyone going again. And it's, you know, Mark Noble, you know, finishing his last season, he's going to want to go out on a high as well. So it's got everything that can build up to them being as high as they possibly can, and hopefully for them, Europe would just be that in grasp, still in a grasp before the end of the season.
As for Everton, Trevor, a win last time out in the Premier League, an unexpected win, I think it has to be said, against Newcastle, has pulled them away from the relegation zone, but only just. And some interesting games coming up on the back of this one as well. Relegation rivals Burnley in a week or so. But then they've also got the likes of Liverpool and United. Even though they've got those games in hand, you're not going to get a lot of change out of those. Plus, we're hearing stories coming out as well that maybe Dele Alli's on the verge of being dropped. He was one of the big signings that Frank brought in. It's a precarious time for the Toffees, isn't it?
Has been for a while, unfortunately. There's no hiding from the size of this crisis. It's obvious for people to see. I do think that Frank Lampard is the right man for the job. I think he's going to be a really, really top manager sooner rather than later. If he could get it right just over this next few weeks at Everton, just to secure, you know, 17th place. That would do me nicely, thank you. Let's and then move on to next season, shuffle the pack. Clear out, actually, at Everton is what is needed. The quality of recruitment has been so mediocre. But they go to West Ham looking for anything. You know, a point is good now, just to get this last stage of the season up and running. Tough place to go to, West Ham. I'm trying to pick out the positives in Everton's performances. There's only really Anthony Gordon who's made any strides this season. Beyond that, Damari Gray flattered to deceive a little bit early on. Regular good quality professional Premier League players have been under par. You know, the likes of Michael Keane, Jordan Pickford's been, you know, inconsistent in goal. Everywhere you look, Dominic Calvert-Lewin has been absent, but still not looking if he's up to speed. Richarlison has been, yeah, I don't know. I think he plays for Brazil, this guy. I don't know what happens when he goes to Goodison and he looks to be lost a rabbit in the headlights, really. Anyway, I have to say, I've got my fingers crossed, and we'll just take it from there. I'll be looking for the result and obviously following it at the weekend. West Ham have had a brilliant season. They deserve to be where they are. Everton have had a bad season. They deserve to be where they are. But I just hope that we survive.
Let's look at another of your old clubs right now, Matt, as Norwich travel to Brighton. Brighton this week announcing some big financial losses, although they seem quite confident as most of that seemed to come from COVID. Norwich look in line for a big windfall. Unfortunately, it's pretty likely that's going to be yet another parachute payment. We hear that the club is run really well, but having been there and played there for a few seasons, how is it, you know, being stuck in that pattern of promotion, relegation, promotion, that typical yo-yo club?
Yeah, I think from when I first went there, it was they were in the Premier League and got relegated. And I think Stuart Webber plays a huge part. I know Delia and the board of, you know, the financial package, I suppose. But Stuart Webber must take a lot of credit for what he's done since he's gone in. I think they are like a family club. I think the business that has been done is all been very shrewd. Minimal money has been spent, and I think they did so well in like the Championship to boost back up. Daniel Farke went in and completely changed everything, and I mean that's from training schedule to actual training routine to everything. And he's then had the players that he's brought in, these players that no one, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even heard of, and they've just come in, they've got a system that he played, and they romped the Championship, and they went back up, and they sort of stuck with that team. They didn't spend any money, and everyone was saying how well they were playing, how exciting they are, but they kept on losing games. They were scoring goals and losing games. They went back down. They kept with the squad. They didn't really sell anyone. One or two players they sold. And they did really well in the Championship, went back up. And this time they decided to spend some money. And they've bought quite a few players, but not many of them have actually played in the Premier League. And I feel like that is the one bit that may have really been a disappointment for them, in the fact that, you know, look at Newcastle. They bought players that are, they played in the Premier League, knew exactly what they were going to get from them. Whereas other players at Norwich have bought, you know, not necessarily known to play in the Premier League. And I feel like that has been the biggest time they've this time given themselves the financial backing to go and buy players. And unfortunately, it's probably going to revert back to, well, actually, OK, we've given it a go. It's not worked. We're going to revert back to, right, we're going to have to recoup, have the financial package of the parachute payment, get back and again, try and do well in the Championship, which is one of the hardest leagues to get out of. So for them to have done it so many times is credit to them, but it's going to get harder and harder to do it with the teams that are around that are going to be coming down and the teams that have come up from League One. It's going to be extremely difficult.
Must be hard work being a fan of a club like Norwich. And Watford to a degree, you know, that type of club that is other archetypal yo-yo clubs. I often wonder, are the Norwich fans enjoying going to the games and coming away with a defeat more often than not, or would they rather be banging away in the championship like they were last season and running away with it and everything's a party. You know, I just wonder, you know, what the fans actually
think. Do you know, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. I think the Norwich fans especially, there's nothing better than seeing a team win and scoring goals. I think the championship winning season, they love it. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it's amazing to have like the Man Cities, the Liverpools, the United, Chelsea all come to Carroll Road and everyone's seeing it. But like you said, around the place having another defeat, it's demoralizing sometimes as fans. So they must enjoy the championship because they know they're going to win majority of the games because they've done it so well. But actually, just having that carrot of being in the Premier League, seeing all the top players come to Carroll Road, it's one of them that's always going to be a difficult, you know, do you go in the Premier League and hope that you can stay up, or do you go in the Championship and again hope that you're going to get promoted?
It's a real soap opera of emotions, isn't it? And I suppose it just goes to show you like how tough a nut it is to crack Premier League survival, because as you said, they're coming up not spending very much money. Then you also had Fulham coming up spending more money or in the top three spenders and then dropping down. That didn't save them either. So it's not an easy thing to, as you say, to get out of the Championship and then to stay in the Premier League when you're there. A couple more games to look at. Trevor, you said you saw Burnley at Brentford a couple of weeks ago. This weekend, Brentford travel to Chelsea, who are in real disarray. But Brentford have a miracle in their team, for want of a better word, because Eriksen came back to international duty in the last couple of games, scored in both, including back at the stadium in Copenhagen. I find it incredible watching it. I'm obviously very pleased to see him doing this as well. But considering what happened to him, he seems to have come back with no ill effect at all. And I can't remember seeing, comparatively, a player coming back from injury looking as good as Eriksen has. And obviously he's had some amazing attention on him there, and it's slightly different there, but it's a wonderful thing to have. And a player of that quality in that form could make a real difference to the end of the season for Brentford.
You know, I mean, what happened to Christian? I mean, he didn't lose his football ability. We all knew that he was at that world-class level, outstanding at international level. So yeah, we'll get that. But I'm delighted that he's back, because we're seeing a very fresh, almost a reborn Christian Eriksen in how he's enjoying the game. He's just so, there's kind of no pressure, because he knows that he's in a position that he never absolutely maybe believed that he wouldn't have been able to play again. And the fact that he has been tremendous. And he has been a sort of shot in the arm for Brentford, no doubt about that. And his quality has been tremendous. I do see him leaving Brentford no matter what. If Brentford stay in the league, I would imagine that there's going to be suitors coming for him, probably from other parts of London. You know, Fulham, for instance, I think they might throw quite a lot of money at someone like Eriksen. But anyway, it's great to have him back. And I did doubt it at the time whether it was going to be a wise move. But he's obviously had medical test after medical test. And as I said, it's great to see him back.
Leeds United host Southampton this weekend, and they've put in some real great performances since they swapped Bielsa out for Jesse. They're expecting Calvin Phillips back as well, which is a welcome return. Although it looks like Patrick Bamford is going to miss the rest of the season. Matt, do you think it's just pure luck that they've had this many injuries this season? Or does this come back to having a small squad and not being able to rotate as much, not having that same depth?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I mentioned about Daniel Farke when he came in at Norwich. He changed everything. I think that's what Bielsa did. And the training style, I know for a fact the training at Leeds is really intense. You know, it's 1v1 all over the pitch. You know, the intensity is so high. And I think what happened at Norwich when Daniel Farke came in, everything changed. The amount of running that you had to do, everything. And players were breaking down, you know, one day, 2 days, everyone was breaking down. And I think it was like the survival of the fittest. This was in pre-season, mind. So you were getting away with it. And I think you're hoping for the players to, you know, their bodies to adapt to the training and everything like that. So you're building these, you know, a bit more robots, I suppose, that you can adapt and
do all of this high intensity stuff. And that's what Leeds had done. But it comes to a point that you are going to be fatigued. You've got a small squad and the intensity they show in games, it's hard to keep it up. And when you start picking up muscle injuries all the time, it's going to be difficult with a small squad. So they are unfortunate, yes, but you're hoping that, you know, for instance, he's making little tactical changes, the training's going to be adapted again, and you're hoping that they're not going to be trying to pick up as many muscle injuries. I know, you know, Pat Bamford's is you know, it's never nice to be out for a while and come back and then get injured again. But for them, they've got a good run to the end of the season. I think that's what they'll be hoping to just have a bit of consistency. You know, he's going to want to see his players on the pitch, get a few players back to sort of give the fans something to hold on to the end of the season. And then he's going to want to reshape and do his thing in the summer to get them going again for next season.
Yeah, you mentioned there at Richarlison there. He did score two goals for Brazil in the week as well, giving Brazil a breaking records in terms of points for World Cup qualification. But let's do the final game of this season, and with at least one Brazilian involved in this game as well, at least in the centre of midfield for Newcastle, who travel to Tottenham. It's the last game of the weekend. Newcastle, brilliant start to the year, the calendar year that is, although they've suffered a bit of a slump, including that defeat last time out to Everton. Tottenham right in the mix for that Champions League spot. A couple of weeks ago, Antonio Conte looked like he was on the verge of walking out, and now that the form seems to have come back and they're really in the mix, it looks like, being between them and Arsenal for that fourth spot in the Champions League. Matt, how do you see this game going on Sunday?
Well, to be honest, I think what Conte's done has been fantastic for them. You know, considering, I think he's used the media, I think after a few games where they've had like great results and then the following game has been like a disappointing loss, I think he's used the media quite well because everyone's been talking about him rather than the team. So he's taken that pressure off the team. You're always going to do well when you've got Harry Kane on form. You know, Son's been outstanding. You know, them two together can just lift a team straight away. They've got quite a good run in towards the end of the season as well. They're 3 points behind, obviously played a game more than Arsenal. But, you know, if you're looking on form, I suppose, they're in a good position. And I think Conte will be looking at thinking, right, you know, this is it. You know, this could make or break what we decide to do in the summer for himself, for the board, for everyone. So for me, I can see this being a Spurs win. I think Newcastle have, you know, they've done what they've needed to do in essence. I think they've bought really, really wisely in the market. I think they've bought great players, as I mentioned earlier, that have played in the Premier League, that know what they're going to get from them. And Newcastle now have, I think they've done enough already, but they'll obviously want to pick up a few more results. But this game, it will be Spurs for me, and Newcastle will be fine and ready to go again in the transfer market in the summer to pick the players that they want to improve them once again.
As Matt says there, Trevor, you know, Newcastle have spent very well, seemingly, in terms of the players they've brought together, and it looks like they're going to be safe now for next season. So really, in a sense, going up against, you know, a very decorated manager in Antonio Conte, this is a real opportunity to sort of benchmark where Newcastle have the potential to be.
Yeah, I think so. But Newcastle again will look different by the start of next season. They'll have made another stride into the transfer window. But what's impressed me really about Newcastle, as Matt says, yeah, the recruitment acquisitions have been excellent. Well thought through, particularly Kieran Trippier, which ticked so many boxes for Newcastle, it was untrue. So that was a great piece of business. I've really liked what Eddie Howe has done, how he's come across again in the media. He actually feels like a proper Premier League manager now. I always felt at Bournemouth, he was still always looked upon as the young guy down there who's done really well, he's run out of steam. You know, that's it. Mm. Goodbye, Eddie Howe. But the fact that he's back and he is, you know, he's very eloquent. He does speak wisely. chooses his words, and I really like him. And what he's done for some of the players there has given them a new lease of life. And of course, I think at this stage, I think 31 points mm-hmm. might be enough anyway. You know, they're sitting on 31 now, the way that this season is looking to go. So I think that's, for the Newcastle players, it's about now playing well to try and stay at Newcastle United. And I think that's the challenge that they will have. I do believe that Conte's done a great job in media management, team management, and all of the things that come with Spurs. And I'm looking forward to him being in the Premier League next season and taking Spurs to that next level.
Yeah, I think for me, the really nice thing is to see Eddie Howe smiling again. Because I think in those last 6 months that he had at Bournemouth, he did really, you know, you say he was the youngest manager, but he seemed to age about 10 or 15 years during the end of his time at Bournemouth. And he just genuinely seems to be having a really good time. He seems to be, although there were some questions at the beginning, welcomed by the fans. And he's really looks like he's building something very positive there at St James's.
I think he knew that this was a really important role. He's had his time out of the game. Mm. He knew what he wanted to do, what he would have changed from his time at Bournemouth. I think that break has made him think, right, this is what I want. This is how I'm going to do it. And he's had a fantastic opportunity at Newcastle and he's taken it with both hands.
Yeah, and we're going to see him have that real opportunity because although he got all the praise at Bournemouth, he didn't have the budget, the facilities, and the sky's the limit right now. Well, we've reached our limit today, so thank you very much, Trevor and Matt, for joining me on the Dugout.
Thanks, thanks, Ant. Enjoyed it as usual.
You have a good weekend, whichever games you're watching, wherever you go. And for you listening, don't forget to head over to sport-social.co.uk for the latest on your team. And there'll be another episode out tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.